You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Chris Lopez here. And while we're getting this thing kicked off, can someone in the chat window just let me know that you can hear me and see my screen? So you're here for today's webinar for the January 2019 Roundup webinar for Denver. Now it is February, but we talk about deals and stats from January because February is not over yet. So what we do here, we give you a quick market update. We will talk about an interesting indicator around the market, and then we'll go through a deal or two. And I like to call this our virtual cup of coffee. So please ask questions at any time through the presentation. If you can't make this live, don't sweat it. We post recording to YouTube and the podcast channel. So you can make it live. Great. Grab a cup of coffee with us. When you can't, great. Listen to the recording. I don't care. I just want you to get the information. So I am joined today by Joe Massey of Castle & Cook. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Chris. Great to see you as always. Thanks so much for having me today. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Still about Joe and myself. So Joe is a senior loan officer at Castle & Cook, and he specializes in all types of investment loans, house hacking loans, and even some primary residence stuff that we don't talk about much.
That's right. Yeah, we do primary residence financing, investment financing. House hacking is a very popular one. I've seen a lot of younger folks buying their first property, renting out a couple of rooms, renting out the basement apartment, renting out the carriage home in the back, whatever it might be. Really a popular topic, especially as home prices continue to go up. And then for investors, we do a lot helping people buy their first, second, 10th investment property. So really try to be a good resource for all of your listeners and viewers. Here. So thanks for having me on.
Of course. And for those who don't know me, I am an agent at Your Castle Real Estate, and all the stuff that Joe does on the loan side, I do on the realtor side and help people find those house hacks and find those investment properties. So jumping into the stats here for January and a little bit of recap for 2018, we're seeing some really interesting stuff. So I was starting to put my notes together for this presentation, going through various emails, various charts, various graphs, and I came across a couple of quotes. And I just realized, you know what? I can't say it better myself. So I'm going to copy and paste it and give credit where credit is due. So this first quote is actually from a Denver Post article just about 2 weeks ago in early February. And the article said, home sellers of Metro Denver came out ready to play ball in a big way in January, but buyers did not show up to meet them in equal numbers. That mismatch resulted in declining sales, longer listing times, and slowing home price gains. So just keep that in mind because we're going to go through a lot of data now. And I actually wanted to pull up a couple of specific data slides for, we usually just do like the whole Denver metro area, but there was some interesting stuff going on for January where in a couple of counties, we actually saw some price declines across certain metrics. So this is actually for Denver County. If anyone saw the, I think it was a front page story. I read it online. So I think it was a front page story in the paper of the Denver Post. Big headline talking about some price declines in Boulder County, Denver County, and Douglas County. So I'm just going to show you. So we're looking at Denver County, which includes Denver City. They're the same. So the median sales price from January 2018 to January 2019, so this is comparing January month to month, the median sales price was down 1.2%, while from $430,000 last year to $425,000 this year. Now, the average sales price was up about 1.1%, so it went up from $539 to $545. Now, Joe, you're better at stats than I am. Talk to us about averages.
Allegedly.
This is my attempt to make you explain this data. Why are we seeing a discrepancy in median prices and average sale prices?
Yeah, I think we're seeing a discrepancy because average sale prices, we're selling more homes at the higher end of the market. And I don't mean million, $2 million, but we're selling more homes at the, $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 homes because there's a lot of those out there and those weigh more heavily than the number of sales of $100,000 homes, right? So let's just think I sell 50 $600,000 homes and I sell 10 $100,000 homes. My average is really close to that $600,000 home. Not because prices have gone up all across the board, but because there's just fewer sales occurring at the lower price range because those homes don't really exist anymore. So that's kind of what you're seeing is the average, right? The stats show that, oh my gosh, home prices are going up, but there's still homes in various price bands. There's just not as many transactions at that 100,000 price range in this example, because those homes have all drifted up in price.
Very well said.
Thank you.
And then, so that data I gave you, that one for those prices were actually detached single family, and just separating out that to townhouses and condos, so attached properties, this is a little more interesting to me. Median sale price was actually down about -13% January over January. So we went from $389,000 median to $340,000 this year, while the average sales price went up 4.5% from about $449,000 to $469,000. And I think it's the same thing what you just said there. I mean, I think everyone out there has noticed a crane or two or 50 in the Denver skyline.
Yep.
And they are building high-end expensive stuff.
That's right. That's right.
Stuff where we don't buy investment property in.
Right. If you think about like a car lot, right? This is one of my favorite examples that I stole from Lon. If I have a car lot and I'm selling a used 1982 Buick and I'm selling Cadillacs, all right? If I sell more Cadillacs and fewer Buicks, the average price of everything has gone up, right? But I still have a couple of Buicks on the lot. So even though my average that I'm selling is higher just because I'm selling more Cadillacs, it doesn't mean there's not still Buicks available. Yep. It just doesn't necessarily show up in the stats, which is why these stats are great, but they can also be a little bit misleading. And I encourage everybody, you got to look at your personal situation. And also, the Denver metro area, the C470 loop, that's a big area. You might see pockets of Wash Park where home prices went up 5% year over year, but you might see pockets of North Aurora where properties went up 12% year over year. And then you might see some stuff in, I don't know, Cherry Hills North, where there's been two sales and property values went down 10%. Not that the actual homes have decreased in value, but it's just very neighborhood specific.
Yeah, and we'll actually show up. Your Castle just published their price change map. I got a slide and a couple slides of a picture of that. And keep in mind, this Denver data for this 1 month, it's a small sample size. We're talking about 350 sold properties on the area, about 600 between the two attached and detached to about 700 sold last month. So it's not a giant sample size. But overall, Denver Metro still went up, and I'm actually going to show you a couple pockets of neighborhoods. But real fast, I said the three markets or three counties that saw some slight price decreases, Denver, Douglas County, and Boulder. I don't care about Boulder. I care about Denver and Douglas County. Douglas County is interesting. Same stuff. Median sale prices were down about -2% for detached properties, $493 to $482. But the average sales price, $553 to $580, which is almost a 5% increase. I mean, that's, again,
exactly what we're saying.
I'm not going to make it be a broken record, but it's the exact same thing you just said.
Yep.
So this picture might be a little hard to see. I literally just took a picture of the map with my iPhone about 20 minutes before this recording to get it up here. But this is a really cool map that I'll describe. I know a lot of people can't see it. So come check out the website or email me. We'll give you this slide. But this is actually a price change map that Your Castle publishes. This one's actually year over year. So it's comparing 2017 to 2018. And then compare all the different, if you call them submarkets or neighborhoods within the Denver metro area. And this is about as good as I could get for the whole like Denver area. And the red that you see, which has a few pockets, Park Hill Southeast, Hilltop West, Cherry Creek, Spear, Capitol Hill, North Capitol Hill, and 5 points means there's either a 1% appreciation or worse. All the other stuff means it was 1% or better, and there's a lot of stuff in the +6% to +9% range, and a couple areas that saw +16% appreciation. So as Joe was just talking about, a couple of those neighborhoods, which is what, 6 or maybe probably about 10 and what we can see total of what Denver's 73 or 77
neighborhoods or something.
It's a lot of neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So we're talking maybe just over about 10% of the neighborhoods saw a flat or negative decrease in prices. So, I mean, when's the last time you bought a buy and hold rental in Cap Hill, Joe?
Never.
Exactly. Yeah. What about Cherry Creek?
Never.
Yeah. Okay. So this is why, like, I wanted to actually dive into this data, because we see that headline And it's had a lot of questions from clients. I know a lot of people are seeing it, but we got to put into context and take the scalpel out and really look at, hey, what is dragging down or what is causing that? Part of it is just it's a very small sample size. And part of it is just some of these neighborhoods where, Capitol Hill, Cherry Creek, Five Points. If you bought that place 10 years ago, you've had a really good ride.
Right.
Like, I don't know the appreciation off the top of my head, but it's really, really
pretty
good.
Darn good. So can you take the mouse there, if you would, Chris? Highlight Cherry Creek. This is such a great example here. So see there, Cherry Creek had a 10% price reduction over the last 12 months from 2017 to 2018, fourth quarter. And you can see average price there is $1,442,000. Now, if you look, there was only 18 homes sold. So this is such a great example that this is a pocket that you're like, oh my God, the sky is falling. Everything in Cherry Creek went down 10%. Not necessarily, right? Maybe the 18 homes that were sold just happened to be the entry-level homes in Cherry Creek that were sold at 1.3, 1.4 million, and they happened to sell one home at 5 million. And that gives you this average, right? We all know Cherry Creek is a great area. Just because it shows here the prices went down 10%, that doesn't mean each individual home went down 10%, the average. Now, also, if you would look at East Colfax there, right? So 12% price increase, 358,000 average. Look at what's happening there. 137 transactions sold, 12 currently active. There's only 1.1 months of inventory. So this is a lot of sales that occurred lower in the market and has pushed prices up in that particular area. So when we look at the overall Denver metro area and we see these kind of misleading stats about median and average, we've got to really look at the individual market, because this Cherry Creek market, even with only 10 sales, can drag all the averages down a little bit as compared to East Colfax, that things have been going really, really well. But that's price of a home is what, 20% of the price of a home in Cherry Creek? So
yeah,
the Cherry Creek weighs so much more on the averages. Right, right. So that's where you've got to understand that some of these stats can be a little misleading, which is why I love this chart and this graph, because you can look at it and really figure out what's happening in my area. Also, as a side note, if you don't have one of these, stop by the office. We would love to give you one of these that you can hang up in your office, at home or at work, wherever. I update this in my office every quarter that I put it in a new map in the frame there. Very useful to have. If you want one of these, come by and see us. We can obviously email it to you as well, but I love having the big, I think it's, 24 inches by 48 inches or something.
Yeah, big it's
poster
a big
size. Yeah. So if you don't have one of these, come by and see us. We'd love to give you one.
Yeah. And I'll also make a note here. So the East Colfax neighborhood Joe was just talking about, that's in the green, which saw a 16% or better appreciation in Denver. So while Denver of all saw what we said, like negative 1% price reduction, a lot of these other neighborhoods in the much more affordable sections, they're in the 9% plus appreciation range.
Right. Yeah. It's just, you just got to understand neighborhood by neighborhood. And the Denver Post is great. I thought their quote was very, very good, because it does feel like, oh my gosh, the market's slowing. It is, but the market was going like a rocket, right? Now it's slowing to like a spaceship. It's not a rocket. It's just a spaceship, right? So it's not, the sky is not falling.
So what's the next slide here? Okay. So this is the second quote that I have borrowed, and this sums up, I think, perfectly what we're seeing here. And this is from Lon Welsh, who's the founder of YourCast Real Estate and one of the most brilliant data minds I've ever met. And whenever he writes something, I definitely read it. So he said, the current market this spring, talking about 2019, is number one, softer than the past 2 years, which were hyperactive, and two, better than the fall of 2018 or the recession. So at the moment, it looks like we've about split the difference of the two extremes, and that might be the best case scenario. So what this chart does, I think if anyone's ever been to one of our webinars or classes before, you've seen this chart. This is the one where it actually shows the active inventory, which is that bright orange line at the top. And then the blue line towards the bottom shows actually how many properties were sold. So you guys can't see it, but all those little letters or numbers on there, that actually shows the amount of inventory or properties sold at the end of each month. So first thing I always like to point out here is the blue line, which is the property sold. It has stayed really, really about the same, even when the market was horrible to now when the market was super hot. Not much has changed. It's been right around the $3,000 to $6,000 band, which is so interesting to me because you go back 10 years, we were at 20,000, 25,000 plus inventory. And then we went down to, historic record low inventory, and we sold about the same amount of properties.
Yeah, that's just a function of that's the number of people that are buying and selling and moving has not increased a ton. It's about the same number of properties, whether the market is good or bad, quote unquote, good or bad, depending on the amount of inventory available. So I think it's this is one of my favorite charts that we have.
So we talked about a couple specific neighbors before. This is data for the whole Denver metro, which I forget how many counties, but it's the whole, basically Castle Rock kind of up to Boulder type range. So it takes in a big part of the Denver metro. So this January of 2019, we were at 5,881 active inventory. So that is for single family homes, detached, and then attached properties. A year ago, we were at 3,800 or about 3,900 properties. So if you do a percentage increase, that's a 52% increase. Now, 52% sounds like
the sky's falling.
Yeah, it's a scary number.
Right.
So let's give a little context here, though, because the average number of active listings for the month of January, and this is just highlighting January with our scalpel here, is about 13,600. And that's from 1985 to 2018. So that's the average amount of inventory, which is right around actually about what they consider a healthy, balanced market,
yeah,
which is what, 15,000, I've heard Juan say,
yep,
which is, between buyers and sellers, meaning it's a balanced market, which it's not really that often that much the last 30 years. So you can see there right now we went from 30 or we're currently at 5,800, which is this red line down here. Kind of show you where that trough is starting to come back up. And then earlier we are at 3,869. So, oh my gosh, a 52% increase. But you know what? We are still at some of the lowest inventory we've ever seen for January in the Denver market history. So even though it's up 52%, it, relatively speaking, it's not up that much.
Right.
We're still going from a crazy seller's market to maybe what, a more normal seller's market.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's so many ways to spin this that, again, 52% increase. You're like, oh my God, the sky is falling. Well, it's kind of not, because we went from 3,800 listings to 5,800 listings. That's only 2,000 new additional homes. Now, had we gone from 15,000 listings to 22,500 listings, all right, that 50% increase, big number. This is not a big number. So the percentages sometimes can be scary when you see a 50% increase, but it's not. It's only 2,000 homes. And look at it way down there. We're still so, so far below a balanced market. Sellers still hold most of the cards. Last year, the sellers held all the cards. Now the buyers hold like one card and the seller still holds the other 51.
Yeah. Like listing agents who return our phone calls and emails now when you want to talk about property.
Exactly. Exactly.
So give you a little more context here. So this red circle here is actually highlighting January 2018, which is the lowest record inventory ever in Denver market history for that month of January. So last year, the numbers we're comparing to is actually the lowest ever on record. And now that's going to be part of why we're seeing I'm using air quotes here, a 52% increase in inventory. We're also at record lows last January. The highest January was actually back in January 2008, which was right around like 25,000 or 25,000 and change in properties.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of the whole other end of where the pendulum can swing. So, guys, we could talk a lot about this chart. If you want to dive into details or a copy, email me, email Joe. And then the last chart we'll show you, and then we'll go into a couple deals, is actually the showing trends. And I really like this because I think it's a good indicator as to what's going on. And as far as I know, it's data that only your castle has. Because what they do here is for every agent that has all their agents, they track all the listings they have across their brokerage. So this is not data from, the MLS. This is data from your castle's internal source. So every time there's a listing and then someone schedules a showing through centralized showing service, which is the most common showing service scheduler, that platform that people use out here, your castle can track that data. So this blue line here, which represents 2018, we started seeing the change of the market of the of the showings actually starting to go down went from August to September. I've talked to a lot of people, and everyone says right around that July, August, September is when they felt all of a sudden like, wow, where is everyone? What's going on? Like, my listing is sitting on the market for more than 2 minutes. What's going on here?
Yep.
So actually in the fall, it dropped dramatically down to like the 9-8 showings per listing range, which is way below normal, which is around 13-14 showings per listings the last couple of hot years during the fall, actually below the recessionary level in 2012, which was right around 10 showings per listings. And then last December 2018, it picked up a little bit. And if you go look at 2019 or January 2019, it picked up quite a bit higher than the recessionary levels, but still lower than what it's been the last couple of winters, these last hot years.
You know what this tells me? Buyers that have been on the fence, this is now your opportunity. Look at how many buyers, if you could highlight maybe the 2018 triangle right above you there. Last January, if I wanted to buy a home, there was 22 other people looking at that exact same home that I was competing against. This January, there's now 14 other people looking at that exact same home. If I'm a buyer, first-time buyer, house hacker, first-time investor, a third of the market is not looking right now. That tells me that a third of my competition has gone away, and I've got a few additional listings that have gone up by 52% as compared to last January. I have more homes to look at, fewer competition. Is this a good time to buy property? Absolutely.
Yes. And I can tell you, like, I mean, we've actually, the last like 6 or 7 deals we've done since the fall time, actually since the last couple of months, we've gotten a few properties actually below the list price. And that's a combination of, you know, the market taking a little breath here, but a lot of sellers who price their properties aggressively on the high side using spring comps in the winter, they had the double whammy of, hey, winter sales are always slower than spring sales, but then also the market slowed down. Great. Hey, your property's been on the market for 60, 90 days now. And the agent's like, yeah, just bring me an offer. Oh, we're going to bring you an offer, but we're going to actually give a little bit of a haircut. And we're not getting amazing things, but we're getting $10,000, $15,000 below some properties. Other ones, we're actually getting some good seller concessions on the inspection items we show up. Hey, there's an issue with the sewer. There's an issue with this. Great. We're getting $5,000 or $10,000 in seller concessions sometimes for them repairing things versus them just telling us to go walk because you got 3 other buyers waiting to buy the property. But at the same time, not every property is like that. We are definitely highlighting certain properties. We are looking at those properties that are stale and overpriced. But then this past weekend, we got 3 more properties under contract. All of them had multiple offers and all of them went above list price. So the world is not falling apart, but you can find some opportunities out there. But don't go out there and start lowballing like crazy because you're not going to get anything.
You're just going to make yourself mad if you do that.
Yeah, and your agent and your lender.
True, yes.
All right, so an interesting data or another interesting slide on this is since those are showings per listings we talked about in the last slide, you know, we actually have, since we have 50% more inventory, it actually is going to change the total number of showings. Because, or the absolute number of showings, which is really interesting because inventory stayed really, really similar the last few years all through the, you know, seasonality with respect to seasonality. But now since there's a 50% increase in January, we want to see what the total number of showings are since it's getting divided out across more listings. So this purple line is this year in 2019. So in January, we were right around 2400 of total showings of properties that your castle agents had listed in January. In 2017, 2018 in January, we were at like 3,000 to 3,200. So the showings were down almost about a third, yeah, which is about what you expect based off of the 50% increase in data.
That's right. Doing my math right,
yep. Huh?
Yep. From our prior slide, you have about a third of your competition that's gone away.
All right, guys. So I know our market data here went a little bit longer than normal, but since things are changing, I wanted to dive into it. And our next slide is our monthly indicator, which, Joe, you picked this, and I think I know why you picked it, but I want you to explain this because this is one of my other favorite charts.
Yeah, I really like this. So in the green, this is days on market. So days on market is, if I list my property, how long can I expect that it's going to sit on the market before it's sold? And the area in the green is a seller's market. And so this first one was back from 1971 to 1981. We had a seller's market that lasted for 10 plus years. And the days on market was about 60. Now, a balanced market is going to be right there in the middle. It's about 75 days. That's where, you know, nobody has kind of a strength, right? That's the average market, 70 days on market. But if you look, you're almost never right at a balanced market. You're usually crossing it, and for like 15 minutes, you're a balanced market, and then suddenly you're back to a buyer's market or a seller's market.
Yeah, that's, I've always found that really interesting. It's just, you're only a balanced seller's market when you're passing from one extreme to the other extreme.
That's right. It's like a pendulum, you know? So now if you look at the area in red, the next one there from 86 to 91, you had a big buyer's market. Now there was a slowdown. There was a lot of issues occurring in Denver at the time. So you had a big buyer's market with up to 90 days on the market. Then you have a normal seller's market again, where you have days on the market is 50 days on the market. So through most of the 90s, really, really good seller's market. Then all of a sudden things turn. You have the Great Recession and we end up with 100 days on market. And now since 2012, days on market has been plunging. And the last two or three years, everybody remembers I could list my home, sell it instantly. And that's what this 25 days on market represents. But look at that. That is abnormally fast. Over the last 40 years, the last 3 years has never occurred ever since we've been keeping track of these records. All right. So pretty amazing to think that right here, the last 3 years have been abnormally fast to sell properties. I think that that is kind of a once in a generation anomaly. And we're probably going to see days on market drift up closer to that 40 to 50 to 60 day range. Yeah. And be more of a normal quote unquote seller's market like we had in the early 90s or through the 90s and through the 70s. I just think that the last couple of years have really been an anomaly. And as buyers and sellers, we're going to start to see things become not so frenzied and a little bit normal, which that doesn't mean that things are bad. It just means it's not absolutely insane.
Well, I think it's a good time. And you can't, the market cannot stay like this. And I'm pointing to what the last 3 years of days on market. That's not sustainable long term.
It's not. No.
All right. So we're going to move into our one deal analysis for this webinar. Like I said, we spent more time on the market data this month. And I want to give us more time to dive into it since things are actually changing. Our last couple of years, we could just like play the same record and just have it repeat about double digit growth. So we're going to talk about one deal analysis. And this is for a buy and hold rental property in Aurora. So I helped this client find the property, and then Joe helped the client finance the property with a loan. So we know this deal very well. So we like to pick deals that we've worked on together because we can really dive into details and ask questions. So this is actually out by out towards Buckley Air Force Base. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom condo, and the purchase price was right around $180,000. And why do we like it? Well, one is we know the complex. This is definitely not the first property we've bought in there. I mean, we're well into probably 20 or 22 properties we've bought in there. And they're just minimal work, and it's great cash flow. I mean, the best cash flow we're seeing right now in Denver is still condos and townhomes.
Mm-hmm. It really is. You know, if you want to buy a single family home, that's great, but you're not going to make as much cash flow as you are in a condo or townhome right now. It's just the market shifts from time to time, and the market right now says buy condos and townhomes.
And just as a little side note, I was actually talking to a friend of mine, James Orr, who's a realtor and investor in Fort Collins, and we grabbed lunch a few days ago, and we were just talking about kind of what, you know, we're buying and our clients were buying and the differences in the markets. And we got talking about what he was buying for buy and hold condos, and it's not condos and townhomes. He goes, yeah, we're not seeing those same numbers. We're still buying detached single family homes, and numbers are still working out well for us.
No kidding. All right. So there's a tip of the day. If you want to buy a single family home, call Chris. He'll get you referred over to James Orr, and you can buy a single family home in Fort Collins.
Yeah. Now, don't be expecting like amazing cap rates, because Fort Collins is very similar to the Denver market, where it's just the margins are tight.
Yep, that's right.
It's just very interesting that they're not seeing that same thing. And I don't know why that is. I don't know what the numbers of condos and townhomes are up there. Mm-hmm. But it's just really interesting to talk about, because he listens to my content. I listen to his content. So we always have these little back and forth conversations. So, okay. So we bought this property. I think we closed on it. It was right around what, middle of January?
Yep.
Yeah. So we closed on some middle of January. So we'll give you a couple of, we'll run down on a few things here. So Joe, this is one of your lending sheets.
Mm-hmm.
You explain this to me and everyone else.
Yeah. So up at the top, you can see the base loan amount. They did, what would that be? 25% down. They had an interest rate of 5.625.
And can I stop you here for a second? Why 25% down?
So the reason 25% down is this is a complex that has some issues in it. And what I mean by some issues, they don't have a lot of reserves. And so for many lenders, it's non-warrantable. What that means is the lender says, nope, I'm not going to lend there. For us, it is warrantable if you're putting down at least 25%. And this particular investor understands that. He understands what's going on with the complex and says, you know what? I'm comfortable investing more money to buy there because it's going to be really great cash flow. So you're exactly right. It's 25% down. 5.625 was the interest rate for an investment property at the time. That's actually come down about 0.375%. I looked at one today, 5.25% for an investment property.
No way, really?
Yeah. Investment property, 25% down.
Can I like lock that in for the rest of the year?
I'll let you lock it in for today. Principal and interest payment, $777. Kind of lucky there. He should go to Vegas. He got the 777s. No prepayment penalty, no balloon payment. And we continue down, no mortgage insurance, an estimated escrow for insurance and taxes, $113. So his total payment on this property is $891. Now, what you don't see there in the next box, it says other homeowners association dues. Those are not included in the monthly payment. And the HOA is going to be the difference between that $412.57 and the escrow, that $113.57. So the monthly HOA is $299.
So that means he's paying the HOA directly, where it's not escrowed in with his monthly loan payment.
That's correct. And I think I fibbed you. $299 monthly HOA payment that is being paid directly to the HOA. So if we add it up, he pays $891 plus $299. So he pays $1,390 a month on this property.
You're good at that.
I'm $1,190. Man, I'm slipping today. I need another Red Bull. Closing costs, roughly $6,000. His total investment, $46,000.
And what's including this closing cost? For you to spend $6,000 and change, what does that include?
I believe he opted to pay one discount point to buy down the interest rate a little bit, processing, underwriting costs, and then all of the title costs are included in that $4,274 there you see as well for title insurance, closing fee, et cetera. And then the other costs would be things like his initial escrow setup, homeowners insurance, et cetera.
All right. And this is actually a screenshot of the appraisal for what it went for. So I'll let you explain this. I actually want to talk about the rent state pool because I found this very interesting.
Yeah. So in the appraisal, these are the rental comparables. So the appraiser pulls three properties that are rented out and then comes up with a monthly rent. $1,675 for property number one, $1,675 for property number two, and $1,600 for property number three. And so in this case, the appraiser probably said, hey, average rents or estimated rents in this property would be about $1,625. Do you remember how much this got rented for?
I don't know the specific unit, but I know because a lot of our investors do Section 8 over there.
Yeah.
And they're, I mean, right around the $1,850 mark.
Yep.
And I know we'd have bought another one actually a few weeks before we closed on this. I think it was just more due to timing. He got rented for $1,800, but that was also like a week after Christmas, which is not the best time to, you know, rent, but better get a renter in there than let it sit for 2 months. So $1,800, $1,850 is really market rent or Section 8 over there.
Yep.
And the two things I'm curious about is like where, because we've got, like I said, we've got a dozen plus investors over there and we know the rents for those properties, all $1,850, $1,858, $1,853, the rents they're getting. Like, where did the appraisal get these rents? Do they go on the MLS or?
Yeah, they go out to the MLS because, I believe that's where it's published, but appraisers have, you know, access to a lot of the same data that we have and they find out what are other properties in the area renting for and they do the best they can. It's not as easy to get rental comparables as it is to get sales comparables. But just because it's what it says on the appraisal doesn't necessarily mean that you can't rent the property for $18 or $1,850.
Now, since this is a single family property and not an income property like a small multi-unit, does the monthly rent that the appraiser estimates, does that have any impact on the loan?
It does, yeah. So this estimated monthly rent of $1,625, we give the new buyer credit of 75% of that towards their monthly payment. The reason we do 75% is
slow down again. I want to go do this math and get, because this is a good yeah. learning thing. So 75% of what we'll say,
So $1,218, we give the buyer credit for income of $1,218 on this property.
So even though there's no signed lease or tenant there yet.
That's right. Because we know they're going to be treating it as an investment property. We're going to give them credit for that estimated rent. Now we take 25% out of that because we figure there's going to be some maintenance. There's going to be some vacancy. There's going to be some management, some repairs, et cetera. That's what that 25% accounts for. But if they're renting it for $1,625, we figure they're going to be making about $1,218 net that can be applied towards the mortgage payment.
Which then I guess that to kind of just explain everyone how this works was, and that is used to offset basically that's the income that they can count, which then helps with their debt to income ratio.
That's right.
Which is the main thing, since this is a small property that they're personally guaranteeing, their debt to income ratio is what they have to focus on, right?
Exactly.
Or you as a lender.
I need to make sure that they can afford the payment, and this $1,218 of income helps them afford this new monthly payment.
Because DTI is what, 45% now?
We'll actually go up to 50%. We're kind of aggressive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So if you guys got any questions on that, definitely let us know. I just like to lay that out because that's one of those nuances that often get overlooked, or I know I'm often, you know, sitting down explaining that with people over a cup of coffee. So I always like to break those numbers down in the thought process on how that works. And I always like to get it straight from the lender who knows a lot more about it than I do. So important, as we like to say, and we'll continue to say, financing is kind of an important deal when
really
you're buying
is.
Properties.
Yeah. And you know, on a side note, I don't think people spend enough time understanding their financing. Now, I'm biased, right? It's what I do. But I think a lot of people spend time finding just the right property, but they don't spend time understanding, should I put down 15% or 20 or 25? And that's what I'm here for, is to sit down with you and let's really look at that and make a game plan for you.
And just to really drive home this point is, I'm just in the process of kicking out my tenant in Reno, going to list this condo I have in about probably 45 days, sell it, 1031 the money in Denver, and this is going to probably be a May or June timeframe by the time I'm ready to roll the money out here. I've already been pre-approved with Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I've asked him in his office 3 or 4 separate occasions, just running some different numbers and scenarios, because I know the importance of having financing lined up and figuring out what can I do with this money and what are my options, options A, B, C, and D.
That's right.
So understand it. All right. So now this is a screenshot of the spreadsheet, and this is a spreadsheet that Joe put together, and that is the one we use all the time, and it makes it very easy to compare apples to apples as we analyze properties. So Joe, this is your baby. Walk us through this.
So the property address, this was a condo in Aurora. It's a 1-unit property. They put down 25%. That purchase price was $180,000. And acquisition costs consisted of appraisal, inspections, you know, any miscellaneous costs associated with the transaction, loan costs, then down payment, mortgage balance, the initial repair costs. I think the property needed just a little bit of work, right?
Yeah, I think I'm getting the two property ball confused, but it needed a couple bucks just to update it.
Yeah.
Nothing major.
Yep. So total initial investment, $49,962. Interest rate on the new loan, 5.625. It's a 30-year fixed. And right now they're not paying anything extra towards the principal. And the monthly rent, once they got it rented with Section 8, was $1,850 a month.
And that's not a confirmed rent. I'm just going off the average that we use, which it should be that this year, just so you guys know.
Yep. Over on the right-hand side, you have your expenses. They've got to pay property taxes, interior insurance of roughly $250. This property has a property manager. I'm really proud of this this investor. You guys know I'm a big proponent of having a property manager because I think there's way better things that we should be doing with our time than managing our individual properties. And if Charles was here, he would tell me what an idiot I am.
Yes, he would like jump across the table.
Right, smack me in the face because he's a big proponent of not having a property manager. Repairs and maintenance, you got to keep some hold back for upcoming repairs and maintenance on the property. And then the HOA dues, that $299 over the course of the year. Comes out to $3,240.
I actually think it's more around $270.
Yeah,
yeah, I think it's a little bit. They have a couple different HOA fees depending on if the unit has the garages or not garages.
Oh, like right.
$265 and $275, I think is it.
Yeah, varies a little bit. Yeah.
And it might be higher on that statement we're looking at a few slides ago because they do have the special assessment.
Right.
Like high 4,000s for some siding, and every property out there. Some of the sellers were paying for it, some of it's wrapped in HOA. It's kind of weird. Always an interesting mix, to say politely.
Absolutely.
So these are the numbers here. So you guys can download a spreadsheet, go to the website, email me or Joe. Yellow fields are what you type in. The non-yellow fields are locked, so you basically don't break the spreadsheet. And it's a perfect balance of keep it simple and get really good numbers to analyze properties with.
That's right.
So going to the next slide, which would be the cash flow tab on the slide, the total annual expenses are $7,200. That's basically everything except the mortgage payment. The net operating income is about $14,300. And then the annual mortgage payments are about $9,300. So his annual before-tax cash flow with 25% down and a property manager is just under $5,000 a year, which gives us
pretty solid.
Yeah, like this is why we like the complex. So that gives us a 10% cash-on-cash return, which is phenomenal in the Denver market right now, and a 7.8 cap rate. Joe, if I call on the phone or if I text you at 12:30 at night saying, hey, Joe, something just came on. I got a 7.8 cap rate. Are you returning my text?
I am available at that hour, yes. Chris, for that text. Yes, absolutely. And keep in mind, this is with property management.
I know.
You take property management out of this, this is probably about an 8.5 cap. Yeah. This is a great deal.
And even if, hey, maybe since it's January, his rents might be more around 1,800 versus the complex average of 1,850. Great, the cap rate goes down. Well, I mean, 0.2 of a point or something.
Yeah, this is a smoking deal. Look at the GRM, gross rent multiplier. A lot of folks from bigger pockets and other places get advice that you have to buy a property if it meets the 1% rule. Guess what? This does. In fact, it's a little bit better than the 1% rule. And that's hard to come by in the Denver market, right?
It's very hard to come by. And what I was getting ready to jump in here and say is that, and that's with an HOA, because it's interesting. A lot of people that come that we talk to from bigger pockets, I think there's definitely, I would say, a more general bias of HOAs are the devil. Pros and cons, we don't talk about here, but that is a 1% rule with an HOA.
Yeah, pretty solid. I think this is a fantastic transaction.
So again, this is why we buy the condos there, because we know them, they're easy. We know a lot of the board of the HOA are investors that we know or we've helped buy properties over there with. So it is a good complex. So if you want details, more details on this property or the complex, definitely reach out to me, reach out to Joe. All right, so that wraps it up for the monthly webinar. And we got a couple classes coming up, and I don't have them up on the slide here. Do you remember off the top of your head, Joe, what we have coming up?
No. Yes. I can look at my calendar, though. Let me see.
I got the computer. I'll pull it up.
Okay. I know we have classes. That's what I know.
And so what we do here, we do a lot of stuff online through webinars and podcasts, but we also do classes. I'm a big proponent of both. Yep. Like webinars and podcasts are great because you listen to it when you want to. But then we also teach some classes as well. So coming up, some classes I want to highlight. Next Tuesday, February 26th, is Advanced Real Estate Economics with Lon Welsh. So
can I interrupt you for 1 second?
Yes.
Go up one Monday. I have a CHAFA class. CHAFA is a great down payment assistance program. So if you are listening to this and don't have a ton of money for down payment, it's really for first-time home buyers, but also really good for house hacking. So if you want to come to that, that's a two-hour class. And if you're an agent out there, it does come with 2 free CE credits. So now tell us about Advanced Real Estate Economics.
Yeah, no, just if you guys want to do advanced stuff, and I mean advanced stuff, like kind of have the basics down and come with a cup of coffee in your hand. Don't eat a big bunch of pasta before, because Lon jumps into data. And then the big class on the highlight, and if I skip one of yours, Joe, you can jump in here.
No, you're good.
One on Tuesday, March 5th is How to Finance Condos and Townhomes, which is a class that you're teaching. So again, if you're looking to buy and hold rentals, that might be a good class for you, whether you're an investor or an agent.
Yep.
And then, March. So about every 2 months, Joe and I are teaching a house hacking class. And so this is on Wednesday, March 27th at 6 p.m. And actually, house hacking, just the power of the finances behind it, that it can help you build a long-term rental portfolio. This is my absolute favorite strategy, because you get maximum leverage, and we're talking 3.5-5% down type range, rather than 25% down for buying investment properties. And then you get what, 0.75 lower on your interest rate since it's an owner-occupant,
yep,
the numbers are phenomenal as you start modeling out. So what we do with this class, we give you an overview of what house hacking is, talk about what's working currently in the Denver market, because it definitely surprises a lot of people as we start talking with them about it. But we actually run through a couple of scenarios, and we spend one scenario in particular, we spend a good hour and change on there going through buying 4 properties over an 8-year period and how that can set you up basically for retirement and put your net worth well in the $1 million and provide some amazing cash flow. And we go through it number by number, by line item, by line item. Yeah. And then we go through a couple other examples as well. So it's a great place to learn about it, great place to network. We usually have new house hackers there. We usually got some experienced house hackers, and we have some really fun conversations here. So if you have any interest, definitely join us on Wednesday, March 27th at 6 p.m.
Yeah, great way to learn about that topic.
All right, guys. So we are going to wrap up here. Again, if you guys need any help with building a rental portfolio here in Denver, whether it's through house hacking or straight buy and hold or finding some places with value add to do maybe the BRRRR strategy, reach out to me. Again, I'm an agent here at Your Castle Real Estate, and I help people find those properties. And then Joe is a loan officer at Castle & Cook Mortgage, and he helps everyone finance those properties.
Absolutely. Questions, guys, call, text, email, fax, send a carrier pigeon, send a smoke signal, staple your note to a dinosaur and send it on over. However you want to get in touch with me, we are happy to help.
A dinosaur carrier
pigeon.
Hey,
you know what? Yeah, whatever it takes. Yeah.
That would be worth definitely something, I think, on the loan if they could do that for you. All right, guys. Thank you so much. And actually, there is one more thing I want to highlight on here. We are doing the February Roundup webinar about a month from now towards the end of March. We'll go through the same thing. We'll talk about the market trends that's going on, and we'll talk about one or two more deals. And then I am really interested to talk about the market trends and see how things change this spring, because I think it's going to be a really big telltale sign for what we're in for this year.
I agree. I think you're exactly right.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. If you're watching, listening to the recording, got questions, definitely reach out. And Joe, thank you for your time, man. I appreciate it.
Chris, I always appreciate you having me on the show.